Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Very many apologies for the delay, but not even presidents and Nobel Peace Prize winners can deal with London traffic. My name is Gareth Jones. I'm Professor of Urban Geography and Director of the Latin America Caribbean Centre here at the London School of Economics and Political Science. It's on behalf of the Centre and LSE Ideas that I'm delighted to welcome Juan Manuel Santos Calderón, President of Colombia, and his family to the school. Bienvenidos a todos. Given the very important relationship that the LSE, and indeed the UK, has with Colombia in sending us so many wonderful students in the academic exchange programs, in the policy, advice, and research, we thank you for making time for this event in the busy schedule of an official state visit. Before I invite President Santos to speak, I need to make, I'm afraid, a couple of important announcements. Please, I'm sure you noted in the hour that you were waiting, the fire assembly points. But in the event of an alarm going off, please remain in your seat until instructed to move. Secondly, I would ask you all please to turn mobile phones to silent or off. For those of you who understand Twitter, the hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE Colombia. After the lecture, there will be time to put some questions to President Santos. And although we are delighted to have the presence of the media here, we will not be inviting questions from the press to maintain this as a public and student event. At the end of the question and answers, we will have some words from Sir Kieran Devane, the Chief Executive of the British Council, and there will be a brief ceremony on the other side of the stage to sign an agreement between the governments of Colombia and the United Kingdom. Finally, and also very important, I must ask everybody to stay seated in the auditorium just for a few minutes, this time I promise, until the signing ceremony is complete and President Santos and his family have left the theatre. Some words now then of formal introduction. Propelled, I'm sure, by his master's degree at the LSE in the 1970s. Then Juan Manuel Santos Calderón had a distinguished career as a journalist, as deputy director of El Tiempo newspaper, recipient of the King of Spain International Journalism Award, and serving as president of the Freedom of Expression Commission for the Inter-American Press Association. Embarking on a public sector career, Juan Manuel Santos has held important ministerial roles as Colombia's first foreign trade minister, as Minister of Finance and Credit, and as Minister for National Defence. In 2010, he was elected President of Colombia and won re-election in 2014 for a second four-year term. I think we might be able to have a claim for value added in today's jargon, in our role as teaching at the President something during his graduate studies here, I hope. Since graduating from the LSE, President Santos has not been a stranger to Houghton Street. And on his last, following his last visit, a colleague reminded me of the closing words of his talk in 2011, in which he stated this: "Think different, think the unthinkable, and progress will continue." For his efforts to think different and move to end the long-standing violence in Colombia, he was awarded the 2016 Nobel Prize for Peace, the third, or maybe the fourth, graduate of LSE to be awarded that prize. The jury is a little out. Without further delay, I ask you to please welcome Juan Manuel Santos, President of Colombia and 2016 Nobel Prize winner, who will talk to us about the legacy of peace.
Thank you very much, Professor Jones, for your kind introduction and welcome. It is always a great pleasure for me to return to my alma mater and address those who are preparing themselves, as I did in the 70s, in this great institution, to take over responsibilities in their respective countries and around the world. This is the third time I've come to speak at LSE. I came in 2008 as defense minister of my country as I led the offensive of our armed forces against crime and illegal armed groups. I returned in the year 2011 as President of Colombia, to speak about the positive transformation my country has undergone in recent years. Now I am here once again, 5 years later, not only as an alumni, but also as a proud father of my daughter, Maria Antonia, who will be receiving her master's degrees in social and cultural psychology here at the LSE next month. Today, I also come to share with you some thoughts about how we've proceeded in our journey through the path for peace in Colombia, and what this means not only to our nation, but also to our region and the rest of the world. As many of you may know, this past September the 26th in Cartagena, after nearly 6 years of negotiations, an agreement was signed between the government and the FARC guerrillas to end over half a century of armed conflict. On the 2nd of October, 1 month ago, this agreement was put to a vote in a plebiscite. To everyone's surprise, the no votes won over the yes votes by a very small margin, 0.4%. We could find many reasons for this result: legitimate worries about some points of the agreement, fear and anger, misinformation, lack of communication. It doesn't matter now. We had and we have to move on. As a Democrat, I immediately accepted the results. At the same time, and in order to avoid further polarization in my country, I called for a national dialogue to discuss and include the objections, the opinions, the proposals of those who voted no, as well as the ones who voted yes. We want to improve upon what we have built and negotiate a new agreement as soon as possible. After a month of intense dialogue, I am sure that we are securing more support and more understanding from all sides in this debate. I want a united Colombia, a united Colombia to sign a new peace agreement with the FARC. We will now achieve a peace that will not only be stable and long-lasting, but also represent a broader and deeper consensus in our country. We will be better off than we were before the plebiscite. So we are turning around this shocking result into a blessing in disguise. As the Chinese would advise, we are seeking opportunity, out of adversity. And this is not only the government's wish, no. Since the plebiscite, thousands of young people, thousands of victims, thousands of members of native communities, scholars, business owners, and ordinary citizens have been demonstrating in our streets, in our plazas, as never before. I've never seen so many people going out to the streets spontaneously, asking us to save the agreement and to save it as soon as possible. Nuevo acuerdo ya is their slogan and my slogan. The Queen, when we were going by the mall in the carriage, and there were some Colombians shouting Nuevo acuerdo ya, she asked me, are they for or against? I said they're for. And we are going to do it, making adjustments, clarifying and improving the agreement. We're going to bring to a close a 52-year-old conflict that has left over 250,000 Colombians dead and more than 8 million victims. I reaffirm it today in this prestigious institution where I learned so much. Peace in Colombia will finally be a reality. I will not fail Colombians' hope for peace and the efforts of the international community that has so generously supported us in this process. And one more thing. The implementation of the agreement with the FARC will bring us one step closer towards achieving full and lasting peace in Colombia. The final step will begin soon, I hope, when we start the public phase of negotiations with the ELN, the last guerrilla group that remains in Colombia. This is how guns will fall silent. However, you students and scholars are well aware that peace is not just the silencing of weapons. Peace is not the absence of war. A stable peace, a fair and long-lasting peace, a consolidated peace, demands bringing well-being to the most remote areas of the country where the state has not been properly present, precisely due to the conflict. A sound peace, a good peace, demands work to satisfy the needs of the poorest, to help them overcome their poverty and despair, and close the gaps between the standard of living of the people in the cities and those who live in the countryside. Nelson Mandela used to say that the quality of a society and of a government should be measured by how it treats its weakest members. This is why I can say that my work for peace is not and has never been limited to the negotiations with guerrilla groups. My drive for peace also includes pursuing economic stability and working for the well-being and improvement of the lives of the most vulnerable Colombians. Here I must give credit to an eminent LSE alumnus who was also its director, Sir Anthony Giddens. His third way theory has inspired from the very beginning my public career. In 1999, I even co-authored a book with the then Prime Minister Tony Blair, defending his thesis and putting them in practice in Colombia. The third way is a pragmatic philosophy that seeks to reconcile the market and the state, standing in the center of the political and economic spectrum. The third way does not view the state and the private sector as rivals, as rival players, but as allies who help each other in order to reach a final goal. Since my early days in public office, I have called this goal social prosperity. And it can be summarized in a very simple, but at the same time, very meaningful sentence. The third way is a way to seek as much as the market as possible and as much of the state as necessary. As president of my country, I have applied Lord Giddens' theory, and the results have confirmed the wisdom of his premises. The third way has led us, first of all, to take responsible path in the management of the economy. In the year 2011, we incorporated the concept of fiscal sustainability into our constitution, making it mandatory for all governments not to spend or acquire debt beyond reasonable limits, maintaining the health of our public finances. We did so because financial crises are the worst predators of the fundamental rights of citizens. With fiscal responsibility, the credit rating agencies restored our investment grade. We are at the top in economic growth in Latin America, and we reduced unemployment for 6 years in a row. However, we are well aware that growth is not enough if it doesn't have a social dimension. Happily, we are accomplishing both. Over the past years, as the economy has been growing, inequality has been falling. That is, we are achieving social growth, a more equitable growth, which is the only truly sustainable growth. Since the year 2010, 4.6 million Colombians have overcome poverty, a reduction of more than 12 percentage points. And we have cut extreme poverty by half. And the number of Colombians joining a large and strengthened middle class is growing. It is worth noting that in our outright fight against poverty, we have been world pioneers in the use of an index developed by another great economist, who I had as a professor both here at the LSE and afterwards at Harvard University, the Nobel Prize winner Amitya Sen. Professor Sen, along with his Oxford Poverty and Human Development Initiative, created the Multidimensional Poverty Index, which measures poverty not based on income, but on a diverse set of factors and basic needs that are defined by the concept of quality of life. This multidimensional approach to fight poverty has enabled us to strengthen and better focus our government social programs in education, in the creation of employment, in health, in access to other public services, in housing and welfare for children and young people. Thus, implementing a third-way approach in Colombia has allowed us to have a development model that is not only successful in economic terms, but also in social terms, more growth and less poverty. We are achieving all this in spite of an internal armed conflict, a war that has drained our resources for over half a century. Just imagine for a moment, how much more we'll be able to achieve if we get this obstacle out of the way. Peace is, and should be, always a superior value for any society, for any country, the highest aspiration, and that is why we have committed ourselves to it because with peace, one can take any country that is at war, but especially my country, Colombia, to its highest potential. According to the Inter-American Development Bank, in less than 15 years, we can become a developed country, a much more equitable, fair, and prosperous nation. What do we need to achieve this? First and foremost, peace. Peace to get rid of the burden of the conflict that has been a handbrake that has slowed us down for over 50 years. And a great national effort is also needed, a consensus between the state, the private sector, and the rest of the society to decisively invest in education, in innovation, in agribusiness, in biotechnology, in infrastructure, in logistics, something that we are already doing. With peace and an ambitious plan of investments, Colombia can move from growing between 3 and 4% a year to a sustained growth of around 6%, which will enable us to make that leap forward. You may ask, where will all those additional resources needed to achieve this change come from? The recipe to get them is clear, and we are moving in that direction: improving tax collections, controlling unnecessary public spending, prioritizing productive investment, and diversifying our economy. For example, we suffered the lowering of the oil prices. We used to depend, a couple of years ago, 20% of all our revenues came from the oil sector. This year, it will be zero. Next year, it will be negative because we have to give some taxes back to some of the oil companies. But we, again, took the approach of trying to get the opportunity out of difficulties. And we are now diversifying much better our economy. And the industrial growth has been at a rate that we have not seen in the last 20 to 30 years. It's growing at 8 and 9%, which is, again, a blessing in disguise, because we were about to have that, I call it the Dutch cold or Dutch disease. Regarding government revenue, a few days ago, we submitted a comprehensive tax reform to Congress in response to both contingent and structural changes. Colombia is, on the other hand, one of the countries in Latin America with the lowest tax revenue as a percentage of GDP. We need a more progressive, a more equitable, a simpler, and a more efficient tax system. The problem with our tax system is that a few pay too much, and many who should be paying don't pay or pay too little. That is why this reform seeks to have a fairer tax system, adding controls to tax evasion. And I want to draw your attention to an LSE contribution to this reform, the carbon tax. Sir Nicholas Stern, Lord Stern, a distinguished professor of this institution, who, by the way, introduced me when I spoke here in the year 2011, proposed the introduction of this tax in the well-known Stern Review on the Economics of Climate Change. Colombia will be the country in Latin America and one of the first countries in the world to establish a high carbon tax on different fuels, and it is going to be taxed according to their levels of CO2 emissions. Our country is one of the richest in biodiversity in the whole planet, but it is also one of the most vulnerable to climate change. This is why we are committed to promote and enforce all actions necessary to contribute towards facing environmental issues. This carbon tax will take care of half our commitment at the Climate Change Paris Summit to reduce CO2 emissions by 20% by the year 2030. And in this area of the environment, this morning I had a very, very nice, marvelous experience. A dream came true. I've been promoting for 4-5 years a bio expedition, inviting many countries and many companies to take part in the expedition, similar to the one we did, the Expedición Botánica, more than 2 centuries ago. There are many areas in Colombia where the biodiversity is concentrated that we have not discovered. Many species that are still unknown. And I was thinking, we are so rich in biodiversity, and the great revolution that the world is having is in biotechnology. How can we cross the dots? How can we take advantage of that? And I was dreaming of a technological advance that will allow us, with a small apparatus, to go and measure the ADN of the species. And this morning, this very morning, in the Natural History Museum, they had a show of what they're doing in biodiversity, and Oxford University has developed this apparatus. Is very small, and they showed me how they measured the ADN of a leaf or of a butterfly, which is exactly what I thought would be a great thing to do for mankind, but especially for Colombia. And so this will give this bio expedition a tremendous boost. And I must say that we have found in the United Kingdom a key partner in achieving these environmental commitments. This cooperation includes the very important protection of the whole Amazon region, which is considered a green lung of the world. Colombia and the UK are also partners in our commitment with the Sustainable Development Goals that we proposed in the Rio Summit in the year 2012 and were adopted by the United Nations last year. Both countries also co-chaired the first World Anti-Corruption Summit here in London at the beginning of this year, and we just had a meeting with your new Prime Minister, and we're committed to follow through in this anti-corruption crusade. And sure enough, in protecting the environment and fighting corruption, as in all other aspects of our national life, Colombia will be much more effective once we finally end our internal armed conflict. For example, in the peace agreement with the FARC has committed to breaking all ties with the drug-related activities and to cooperate with specific actions in the fight against drug trafficking. This is a huge symbolic value. This has because the FARC, who once protected illicit crops, will now join the state in efforts to substitute illegal crops for legal crops. We have been fighting drugs for over 40 years. More than 40 years ago, the world declared the war on drugs in the United Nations. Colombia has been the country by far that has made the largest and costlier sacrifice in this war. We have lost our best leaders, our best policemen, our best judges, our best people. We managed to dismantle the very powerful drug cartels, Medellin cartel, the Cali cartel. However, we are still the number one exporter of cocaine to the world. So that's why we have approached this problem. I'll try to stimulate the discussion of the world to have a new approach. You know, when you fight a war for 40 years and not win it, you must rethink what you're doing. So I think with this step forward, I think we can do a lot more. And add to this the environmental dividend of peace. Illegal crops are replaced with legal crops, but the deforestation of millions of hectares of our rainforest will stop, because then you don't have the demand for those new areas to plant the coca plants. Furthermore, bringing peace to Colombia also means that millions of barrels of oil no longer will be spilled in our rivers and seas as a result of an end to the attacks against our oil infrastructure. To give you an idea of how much oil has been poured into our rivers and our seas, it's around 4.5 million barrels, which is equivalent to 14 times the worst environmental disaster that the world has had, which was the Exxon Valdez. What else will come with peace? The British have experienced firsthand the effects of concluding a peace negotiation. Just look at the peace of mind and prosperity that came after the peace process in Northern Ireland. As a matter of fact, I am visiting Belfast tomorrow. But the most important thing, the most important objective, the most important consequences, of course, are that lives will be saved. The lives of soldiers, of policemen and women, of civilians who will no longer have to sacrifice themselves because of an absurd armed conflict. War is a factory of pain, a factory of misery, a factory of victims. If we stop it, we can better repair the victims of the past and, above all, prevent more victims in the future. And something else. Ending a war is opening the door to many opportunities. Colombia, war-free, will reach its highest potential and become a positive factor in the global context. Many business owners want to invest in our country. We've seen this morning, but have not done so because of the risks tied to an armed conflict. They will now be able to do so in a climate of peace. Additionally, knowing that we are one of the countries in Latin America that protects investment the most. Indeed, last week, the World Bank's Doing Business rating was released. According to it, we are now the second best country in Latin America to do business. For many years, tourists missed the opportunity to visit and enjoy one of the most culturally diverse countries in the whole world, that also has some of the most breathtaking natural wonders. Now they will be able to visit without fear, as millions of world travelers are already doing, discovering the hospitality and warmth of Colombians and the beauty of our cities, our countrysides, our beaches, our mountains, our birds, our butterflies, our jungles. On the other hand, the vast resources spent in war will now be devoted, as they should be in any normal country, to education, to health, to public safety. This is to do the right thing, to improve people's quality of life, in particular the poorest and the most vulnerable. This will be the legacy of peace in Colombia, a legacy that will be furthered with the implementation of the peace agreement with the FARC, a legacy which we have been building for over 6 years by applying the pragmatic policies of the third way in our country. With good judgment and responsibility, allowing the market to operate and the state to protect and regulate, applying the principles of good governance. We are transforming the lives of millions of Colombians and making our country a place that deserves to live and be lived. And we are seeking peace, always peace, which is the superior good, the highest yearning of any society. As you have seen, much of what I learned here at LSE, I have put into practice as a government leader. History will determine whether or not I fulfilled my goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Santos. I'm conscious of the time, but I'm also conscious of the responsibility of the chair to give the floor some opportunities to ask the speaker some questions. I think it would be best to do this in groups of two or three. And there are some microphones coming around. So if you could please, if you wish, say your name and then ask a question rather than give another speech. Thank you. The lady in the front here, person in the front here.
Okay. My name's Sue Willman. I can understand the desperate need for an end to conflicts in your beautiful country, because I've been visiting there since 2008 as part of the Columbia Caravana International Lawyers Collective, and we've been visiting to look at the human rights situation, in particular of lawyers there, like the respective Kahar, who are here today. And we were there in the excitement in September when you announced progress in the peace process, and so rather surprised to hear from the UN that last year was the most dangerous year for human rights defenders in 20 years, perhaps linked to their role in the peace process, looking for justice. So my question is, as you advance towards peace, as I'm sure you will, and as foreign investment increases land use, can the government offer some more protection to those human rights defenders and lawyers as they do this important work in defending human rights and the environment?
Take two or three questions at once. And I'm looking at the middle there.
Thank you, Mr. President, for your lectures. My name is Dylan. I'm a postgraduate student at LSE, studying police and communications. I have two questions. First, I'm from South Korea, and which also went through a war, and which also has tension with North Korea. So my question is, what is the best way to build trust when negotiating a peace treaty? My second question is, what is your best memory at LSE? Something non-academic, please.
Okay, although there were two questions there, let's try one more. The person behind, just there. Thank you.
Hello, President.
This side of the room will get a chance, believe me.
Thank you, President Santos, for coming to LSE. My name is Juan Gonzalo, and I'm a student of development management. We were questioning the peace agreement with the ELN. Of course, as a Colombian that has voted for the yes, it bothers me, or it makes me wonder whether we will be able to get a sustainable peace not only with the FARC, but with the ELN, which also has a political agenda. And of course, the risk of having a power vacuum when the FARC have demobilized and take, of course, the business of narco traffic, which so hard we have tried to defeat. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will answer these three questions and then the next three. in order to address as soon as possible. If the government is willing to protect the human rights protectors and the lawyers, of course. The answer is yes. We've been improving the protection of human rights in every respect. Even we made a dramatic change in the culture of our armed forces, our police. We now can say that with the help of the British, we have been able to change that culture. Now the legitimacy, which is based on the respect for the human rights of the citizens, even of your enemies, is what gives any armed force around the world its best asset, which is its legitimacy. And if you take into account or you count the number of incidents that human rights protectors or labor unions have had in the recent past, you see a dramatic decrease in the numbers of people being murdered, for example, for what they are doing, either trade union activity or human rights protection. We're still in the war. The war has not finished. And this is one of the things that we think is going to improve more, because, as I said, war is a factory of victims and of violation of human rights. And with the end of the war, we will be much more prepared to concentrate our efforts in respecting every human right of every Colombian citizen. About how to build trust. That's the most difficult but the most important word when you start a peace negotiation. How do you build trust? In the case of Colombia, with people you've been fighting for three generations. It's been very difficult, but you start to give some signals and do gestures that start to create that trust, and slowly this trust appears. It has not appeared fully. We still are very mistrustful of the other side, but we reached a point where it allowed us to start getting agreements. And that's because the trust is not complete. We have set a number of procedures to guarantee that what is signed will be complied with. So this is very important in any negotiation. What is my best memory of the LSE? A beautiful girlfriend I had. ELN.
That's an ELN.
The ELN question. You are quite correct. To have a complete peace, we need the ELN on board. I've been talking to them for years already. We have an agenda. We had a meeting ready last week to start public negotiations in Ecuador. But I told them, I will not sit down if you still have people kidnapped. Kidnapping civilians is not allowed in any warfare rules. This is prohibited by everybody. This is something which is not acceptable. And they had agreed to free a particular kidnapped person that they had, and they didn't do it. So I told my negotiators, you will not go there. When they release them, and I hope they'll do that soon, we'll start the formal negotiations with the ELN. We already have an agenda. We have had secret talks for many years, and we have the agenda ready, which is 50% of any peace agreement. We did this with the FARC. Secretly, we agreed on a specific agenda, and then we said, once these points are negotiated, the conflict is over. And we will hope to do the same thing with the ELN. And regarding the other question about how are we going to fill the vacuum that the FARC is going to leave in the areas where they had some kind of control or influence. One thing that we have done in this peace process is learn from other peace processes, mistakes or lessons that we can incorporate into our own peace process. We studied very in depth what happened in South Africa, what happened in Sri Lanka, what happened in Northern Ireland. We used the Northern Ireland example very much, what happened in Salvador or Guatemala. And one of the lessons that I think was we draw from those experiences was don't diminish the capacity of your armed forces, because the post-conflict and the security during the post-conflict is essential. So that's why we are not, and we did not allow the armed forces, their doctrines, their policies, or their composition to be a subject of negotiation. And on the contrary, we are maintaining the armed forces in order to be able to guarantee that the state will be present in the areas where the FARC are withdrawing. This is a crucial aspect because people must see that in those areas, life will improve.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to be the most unpopular person in this room because of a vote in the Houses of Parliament. I think I'm allowed to say that. Some of the people who were involved in the signing ceremony have to come and do that agreement now. And so we are going to have to... I'm trying to choose my words. This is not something I'm good at. I'm going to have to call an end to the questions and answers for one quick second before I do so and ask Kieran Devine to speak. Nelson Mandela puts his most pleasurable memory of the LSE, the receipt of a baseball cap from Anthony Giddens. Okay, I'm probably not about to improve my popularity.
You could say more if you want. You think so?
Yes. Okay, I am about to improve my popularity. if you could teach on my course as well, that would be fantastic. President has... I think you have a state dinner later this evening, but somebody else might get annoyed. We can take at least maybe one more round of questions, if that's at all possible. And I owed this side of the room a little bit. To your right there, person, yes.
Welcome to the LSE, President Santos. My name is Alvaro Mendez. I'm a senior research fellow here at the LSE. 2 weeks ago, the foreign minister of China visited Colombia. You talk about reducing the... dependence on commodities. What is the Colombian government doing to make sure that they get a good deal with the free trade agreement with China? The Chinese have a very clear idea what they want, but I'm not sure Colombia has a clear idea what they want.
Could you repeat the last part? Can you hear me now?
2 weeks ago, the foreign minister of China was in Colombia. I just want to make sure that what is the Colombian government doing to make sure that they get a good deal out of the free trade agreement that they are negotiating with China?
Let me see. Ooh, decisions. This person, just a few rows, 1, 2, 3, 4 rows in front of you. Yes. And then equally... to the person against the wall over there as well.
Hello, I'm a student from Media Communication and Development here in LSE. I want to ask you, linking to the trust question. Okay, you have trust between, well, you're building trust with FARC and the government. How do you build trust with the citizens in terms of the peace agreement? You know, like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we lose a referendum in terms of peace. How do you turn out this and engage citizens towards peace? You know, like 63% of our people didn't turn out to vote, and half of the votes who voted against the peace agreement. So if you see less than the 20% voted yes, how do you turn out and trust a little bit in peace agreement?
Thank you. And if you could pass the microphone.
So my name is Veronica. I'm an LSE alumni now doing a PhD at UCL. And I had a similar question to yours. It was about how to, once we have a new referendum, how are we going to ratify it? Like today, new Colombian journals were saying like the new strategy was approving it in Congress instead of a new referendum. And it's also connected to this initiative that there is in the country about the town meetings, about the cabildos abiertos, because in many municipalities in Colombia now they are having cabildos abiertos led by the victims to ratify the agreement that was signed in September. And my second question is about the gender approach. I'm wondering now that this new agreement is being negotiating, what's happening with the gender approach? Because we read the news about the meetings with the right wing parties, with the church and with Chris. That question.
Thank you.
Okay. First question: free trade agreement with China. What we agreed was to make a study. A joint study of about the convenience of negotiating a free trade agreement. So we want to make sure that what we do, the next step forward, would be convenient for both, but especially in our case for Colombia. So what we decided was not to initiate a free trade agreement negotiation, but to initiate the study of the convenience of a free trade agreement for Colombia in these particular circumstances. And that's what we're going to do. On trust, how do you build trust with the 50% that voted no? Because it was 50 and a tiny bit percent voted no, and the rest voted yes. So it's virtually a 50-50 split. What did I do as soon as I heard the results? I accepted the results. Many people advised me not to. The Hurricane Matthew hit Colombia that same day. The whole north of Colombia was hit by the hurricane. We lost millions of votes. I said, no, we have to respect the results. And in a way, I think it's a blessing in disguise, because if the yes had won by a small margin, Colombia would be in flames today. And what I did was open a national dialogue. And we've been meeting all the people that voted no, or the different promoters of the no vote, to hear them, to see what their concerns were. What is it that you don't like of this agreement? How can we change it in order to satisfy your concerns? Many of those concerns had to do with clarifying certain aspects. For example, you mentioned the gender chapter. I can assure you that I will not touch the gender chapter in terms of the rights of women and minorities in the post-conflict. I will not change a word in that. But I will clarify that this is not what it's called now, ideology of gender. This was a big discussion in my country. The ideology of gender is a theory whereby you are not born man or woman. You develop as a man or a woman. The church, not only the Catholic Church, but the Christian churches, think this is completely out of bounds. This is the destruction of family, and they're vehemently against it. And somebody said that the gender approach, which you can summarize in one phrase, women will have the same rights as men in the post-conflict, which is, I mean, what more simple and stronger than that? They said that the ideology of gender, the theory, was encrypted in the agreement. And so suddenly I start hearing priests from the Catholic Church or leaders of the Christian religions calling for a no vote. And I said, what is happening? Well, this spread like flames. It was a complete lie. It had nothing to do. But they calculated around 1.5 million votes that voted against the peace agreement simply because of this specific factor. What have we done with the Christian churches and with the Catholic Church? Read the agreement. And if you see anything that in any way suggests that we are incorporated into our constitution the so-called ideology of gender, we will strike it down. Well, they read it, and they found absolutely nothing. So you can rest assured that we're not going to change the approach that we, I think, was one of the good things about the agreement, is the gender, the chapter on gender, and the rights of the woman in the post-conflict. Now, how do you build more confidence, and how are you going to ratify the agreement? We received a bit over 500 proposals, different suggestions. We've been classifying them, and we've been talking to many of the no proposers, including my predecessor, former President Uribe, his group, and other groups. We're seeing what could be changed. And we are sort of playing simultaneous chess, one board here and one board in La Habana, with the FARC saying, listen, we have to revise this and this without affecting the real substance of the agreement, which I think was a good agreement. There was a study by a university in the U.S., Notre Dame University. There's an institute called the Kroc Institute, which specializes in comparing peace agreements throughout the world and throughout history. And they made a very detailed, complete study of our peace agreement compared to the 34 peace agreements that have been signed in the last 30 years. And the conclusion was, this is the best agreement ever signed. It has everything included. It's an agreement that has the less chances to create violence in the future. And however, well, the results of the plebiscite were those results. So what we're doing is trying to bring in the people that voted for no with genuine reasons. Some of them simply don't want an agreement. They will never jump into the bandwagon. But many are sincerely now discussing and saying, if you do this, if you do that, I will be completely satisfied. So that's what we're doing. And I hope, and this is my objective, to have very soon a new agreement with a much wider support. And at that time, I can decide on, I have various alternatives. The law gives me the power to choose any of the alternatives. I can call another plebiscite. The ruling of the Constitutional Court is very clear. When they declared the plebiscite constitutional, they said clearly, the president, if there is a no vote, can negotiate a new agreement and call a new plebiscite without even having to ask Congress for permission. That's one alternative. I can follow another alternative, which is contemplated in our constitution, which was the one you mentioned, the cabildos abiertos. What is a cabildo abierto? These are, we have a bit over 1,100 municipalities in Colombia. These are the base of our electoral system. They can convene in each municipality a discussion, and people sign in, and they discuss an issue, and they can vote on that issue. And this is how the 1886 Constitution was approved, through cabildos abiertos. That's another option. The third option is use Congress, which is the institution that is elected to do that, to approve the laws, and this would be a law and a constitutional reform. So when we have the new agreement, I will then decide what route. It could be a combination of various alternatives or just one alternative. I will decide that, hopefully, in a way precisely to avoid more polarization. Polarization in any society simply doesn't permit progress, and it holds decisions on any matter, and it's not good. I don't want to polarize the country anymore. I want to unite the country, and I think we can find a common ground here. So that's why I say maybe losing the plebiscite was a blessing in disguise.
I'm afraid we're going to have to thank the president in the conventional way for his very open and very frank discussion about the legacy of peace and the future, the interesting times that Colombia is experiencing, and the interesting future I think it's about to have as well. So if we could please thank President Manuel Santos for his speech.